All right.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show. My name is Don Allen, and over in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Good evening, Mr. Edwards. How are you?
Fine, Don. Fine. On this early December, kind of weather up and down, talking about 40 or 50s, you know, people slipping and falling out here on the ice. It is treacherous. But what do we got, Don? A lot of things going on. You were just saying as we were preempting in, some study came out which it's been coming out for quite some time, indicating, geez, Minnesota is the worst state or the least desirable for African Americans in the United States. I thought it used to be Wyoming and maybe Montana and Iowa.
Yes. And they based this on, Mr. Edwards, on the percentage of blacks, 5.4, black home ownership, 25.7%, which is the fifth lowest in the United States, black incarceration rate. 2,321 per 1,000 people. Black unemployment rate, 15%, tied with the lowest state. And unemployment rate of all people is 9.4%, according to this study. Yeah, and they're saying
9.4% because unemployment amongst African Americans is more than 9%, man.
Oh, yeah.
Star Tribune just went with a story 2 weeks ago trying to pretend that the unemployment had been, they initially said in the headline, by half, but the last time I looked, 15 and 9 are not half. 7.5 is 15. But anyways, so they're putting that up again. I mean, Don, are you surprised? Are we supposed to be surprised?
Oh,
those of us
who
have been out here for a long time, for millenniums, if you will, talking about this problem and have been accused of stirring up manure, if you will. They use the other word. It starts with
attacking.
Next. So I'm not, you know, that's great that somebody concurs with the findings of some of us, if you will, over the years. Here's the thing that bothers me, and we'll be getting into that. We're going an hour tonight, I believe, is that I'm not just quite clear on how it is that with as much money that has gone into the African-American leadership pockets over the last 20 years. Why we continue to have these problems, if you will, this malfunction of success, if you will, because it clearly is a malfunction. I just don't understand how it could be happening. I mean, our organizations have been well endowed, or at least they used to be, and the current group of leadership, if you will, would indicate that they are the greatest and best leaders in the history of the state since before even Minnesota was a territory in the 1850s. But anyways, I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure what it is that we're supposed to say to our listening audiences, particularly here in the state of Minnesota. I mean, given the amount of money that's been poured into the African-American community, man, we should be in the first one percentile of every damn thing that goes on. Education, housing, employment, a lack of incarceration, if you will. We should only be, you know, 2 or 3% in the penitentiary, et cetera. But it's all reversed, man. So I don't know. Maybe some callers will come in. Maybe we'll have some calls. Give that number out. So they can be ready.
I invite them to call in. It's 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And the lines are wide open.
Wide open.
Yes.
Say, does it say why these conditions exist here in the state of Minnesota? I mean,
Well, they attribute it to the lack of equity, racism, foul hiring standards, bank loans. I mean, they have just a list of stuff. The article is 4 pages on the net, on the web log, and it goes into detail to explain the reason why these states are so bad. Actually, number one is Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And number two is Minneapolis, or the Twin Cities, Minnesota, state of Minnesota. And so you wonder why, you know, how, like you just said, Mr. Edwards, you know, all these agencies, all this money that has been put through the agencies, and still we have people are rehashing old tricks trying to get new money.
Yeah, well, we discussed that on last week's program. Mm-hmm. We talked about, and, you know, we didn't hear any calls come in raising any questions about it. We talked in terms of a particular crew, if you will, that were involved in a significant plundering of monies that had been directed or allocated to the African-American community, both Minneapolis and St. Paul. I guess everyone was comfortable with that. I mean, we talked in terms of checks that went into what came from foundations, went into bogus organizations, laundered and wound up somewhere else, never to be seen again, though it was supposed to be for training and employment and such things as that. I'm not understanding, again, why it is that, you know, folks should express concern when nobody's, they're not prepared to do anything about it. You know, that's the thing that gets me. I'm so saddened by that. Because, man, it's as bad out here now as any time in the last 35, 40 years, you know.
Yeah, it's real curious, Mr. Edwards, because, you know, last Sunday I got a chance to ask the president of the Minneapolis Urban League a question about his 13th grade proposal. And as we know, and as our listeners, just to bring them up to speed, Minneapolis Urban League had a couple of schools here in town, a elementary school in North Minneapolis, right off Penn Avenue there, and in South Minneapolis on Blaisdell, where they currently operate a high school. And a proposal was put into the state legislature, and I think approved for over $600,000 for them to start a model for a 13th grade, which was supposed to be an employment, closing the gap kind of thing. And I called the station and asked President Scott Gray of the Minneapolis Urban League, you know, I asked him, if your high school is in academic probation and you have not provided test scores to the state, and your elementary school and group home are both closed in the quiet of night, I says, how can you manage a 13th grade program? And where are the academic experts, you know, around you? And I was hung up on, and it was noted by this particular radio show host that I was bashing black men, that I don't like black people, that, you know, that you're, when you ask a black leader a question, it's bashing them. And we deserve an answer, Mr. Edwards, because I tried to explain to a friend of this person, that this radio host, that when the white community asks questions of their leadership, an answer is supplied in writing, in detail, good, bad, or indifferent. You know, if these agencies like the Minneapolis Urban League want people to get behind them, you know, we have to cheer for their success and also know their failures. But, you know, we don't even know when a board meeting for the Minneapolis Urban League will be.
Yeah, you're right about that. And in fact, we're not even sure. Is the Urban League a membership organization, which it's not? Or, you know, how does it go about the business of selecting its leadership? Yeah, I heard the hostility directed towards the caller, who was you, by the person that was hosting the program, indicating negativism was not the order of the day. But then I keep hearing the statement in that context about we just need to have access to the money, and that's what bothers me, because all these folks that say that do have and have had access to the money.
Oh, big money. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
right.
So when they say that, I mean, you know, that's just a ploy, not to deal with the reality of the facts. Oops. Mm-hmm. Yeah, let me just say this, because I've been, I know it'll be a year, by the way, and at one point, in fact, on this program about a year ago, was congratulating you and the new leadership that came in on the 13th of December, 2013 of the NAACP of Minneapolis, and there was so much high hopes as it pertains to the organization, But I stayed silent, and I wish the best, and even in my column in the Spokesman Recorder, I wish the best to the leadership and hope for the best. And then I started hearing this story, these stories from some of the insiders, if you will, that the organization was broke. You know, I think they had, what, $200 or $300 in the bank? Was that what you guys were told on executive?
That's what we were told.
I can't even begin to fathom that, because what has happened in the last 10 years, the NAACP, which really doesn't have staff, it did have a entity called the Parents Center, which was a front for the massive ripoff. But the NAACP in the period from 2001 until about 2006 went through almost $750,000. That still hasn't been accounted for. You people didn't know that?
No, we did not know that. There was no report to that.
You see, and what I'm going to do, because of the criticism, whenever we come up with the facts and information, right now I'm looking at a document which is the minutes of the NAACP 2001, and they had $183,000 in cash on hand.
Oh, they did.
Yeah, that was in 2001. I mean, you know, the time moves on. But at the end of 2002, in a audit that was done of the Minneapolis branch of the NAACP, that organization in the calendar year 2002, I mean, I know it's a long time ago and things, mm-hmm. I guess, happened,
sure,
had
sure.
a cash position, you know, white folks use the term total cash position, of $216,312.02.
Okay.
And let me just ask this question, because I kept hearing about one of were you folks on the exec committee this year, earlier this year, were you given a financial update on your investments?
Did you know
about your general investment general fund and your investment special fund? Did you guys know about that?
Mr. Edwards, we were not told of any of this. There wasn't that much organization even to figure that out, to tell you the truth.
Well, in 2002, when I well remember the changeover and the Reverend Al Gallman, who no longer resides here, who left his church and et cetera, you guys had money. And, of course, like I said, again, this is, you know, 12 years ago. But you had $72,673 at Wells Fargo, and you had an account at U.S. Bank for $85,780.
Wow.
Yeah. Did you ever know about your Freedom Fund? Did you guys ever talk about the Freedom Fund?
No, I didn't even know we had a Freedom Fund.
In it?
Oh, wow. No, they did not talk about that. They did not talk about that at all. And, you know, I know.
Well, you know, one of the things that for those people, mm-hmm. naysayers, the report you really want to, the audit you really want to get your hands on, you want to talk about a smooth ripoff, was a financial statement put together by a white auditing firm for the years 2003-2004. That's before the Parent Information Center, quote-unquote, was allegedly handed off to an independent entity. You guys know that the NAACP went through $577,000 in cash?
I had no idea.
Is that right? Now, here's the thing I have to ask, because the Freedom Fund was the sole property of the NAACP and had been a fund in existence for 80 years. Oops. When I heard the conversations coming out of your NAACP earlier this year about you only had $200 or $300 in the bank, I said, but how could that be? Because there were strict requirements as it pertains to the Freedom Fund and how that money was to be spent. No one can account for what happened between 2006 and last year, or excuse me, this year, I'm sorry. It was last year. Well, it was December 2013. Why there was no financial report on the Freedom Fund. You know, I have an interesting letter, by the way, here in the big file from Dwayne Reed, the then president during the transition after Albert Gallman, the Reverend Al Gallman, resigned, and both the NAACP, his pastorship, and relocated to Tampa, Florida. Let me just ask this question. Maybe you get a call. Did you ever hear of a guy named Silas Houston?
Oh, yeah. I've heard of him before. Yes, I have.
I tell you, man, there's some documents with regards to old brother Silas. Silas, by the way, for the listening audience, was in the Witness Protection Program, was brought here to Minnesota, kind of set up, took control, working closely with Shayla Lindsay and et cetera, who, by the way, Shayla Lindsay is the wife of the Reverend Gail Ford, who is the national director. When she left as president of the NAACP, she relocated to St. Louis, where he had his regional office had been moved from Denver, and they married, and then he was, a couple years later, appointed as the so-called national, because I know you've been trying to reach him and talk to him for over a year. But anyways, yeah. the money situation. Man, I look at the money that, I mean, the NAACP went through. Man, I'm telling you, you talk about professional fees and et cetera. Oh, $140,000 in professional fees, people paying themselves money for professional fees. So I say all this to say that you have to understand that white folks know all of this is going on, okay? And even though as a black activist, black nationalist, black militant, whatever you may want to call me, you know, it's hard to defend sometimes when the white philanthropic community decides to cut our people off. Not the leaders. The leaders still get their hustle. They still got, you know, nice homes or able to do things, you know, buy dope, things like that. But anyways, you know, we just don't have an honest discussion with regards to what our leaders have done. You know, Booker Hodges, who was also a former president of the NAACP until he was stabbed in the back by Dwayne Reed. They had a falling out. But Booker Hodges in 2010, the spokesman recorder, named some individuals and talked in terms of how $10 million had gone through their hands in a period of a decade. Hmm. All of it allegedly directed to the to help and to assist and to uplift the African-American community. By the way, that specific figure of expenses in the 2003 audit of the NAACP, and there's three columns across, if you will, NAACP branch and Parent Information Center, $584,150.
Wow.
Man, people was living good, man.
Yeah, they were. Yeah. They were living real high on the hog. Well, see, Mr. Edwards, to tell you this, I've never heard of any money of that amount. I mean, I knew that they were back in the rears on their rent up there at the church on 4th Street.
Yes.
I know that there was an office, a mysterious office over there that no one ever wanted to go check out. And so, I mean, I was just wondering, you know, when I would ask the question, though, you know, Mr. Edwards, they after I was elected, they wanted to do 3 months. They took them 3 months to get rid of me. Because I was asking the questions like, well, what are we going to do? How are we going to do this? I said, we can't use any white guilt anymore because Obama's president. I said, can we put together some proposals and go to these 17 corporations, Fortune 1000 corporations? And nobody wanted to do that. Everybody was, you know, at least myself, I know the president, the first vice president, you know, they had a tenuous relationship, to say at least, something about it. And and so the president decided that he would go to all these meetings. And Mr. Edwards, I've been getting calls today that the NAACP is telling folks that the stadium is in compliance and they are hiring black folks down there and everything's okay. But I did actually email a data request down to the stadium official because the person that's doing this has a contract, a cleanup contract with Mortensen. And as soon as I get that data, Mr. Edwards, we're going to unleash the Kraken on them. Because if you're going to be quiet because you got some money and they're still behind, like MnDOT just came out with their numbers and they're still behind. So, you know, you get somebody some money here, they'll shut up, especially this particular guy.
Well, that's kind of what is being talked about, and that's the reason that the governor's staff has been reflecting on some of this data. The attorney general has gone in and taken a look, you know, with this request for $26 million in play. You know, it appears that it looks like it's Republicans, but, you know, the facts are the facts. By the way, for anybody that, you know, saying, what, you know, why are these guys doing this? They're doing character assassination, et cetera. No, the financial statement is not character assassination. Let me do this for our listeners, because this this independent auditor's report dated August 20th, 2005 by Larson, Allen, and WeShare and Company LLP to the Executive Committee of the Minneapolis NAACP. Lars and Allen, quote unquote, no relation. I just realized that my co-host has no affiliation. This is an all-white financial firm. But they were brought in because, oopsie daisy, wasn't supposed to tell this, but because the state of Minnesota ordered the repayment of significant monies by the NAACP and the Parent Information Center because of misappropriation and malfeasance in office. Oops. And so the Parent Information Center just kind of disappeared. See, this is one of the reasons there's so many of our black parents in the world of education are having problems with regards to what's happening to their children who are being shipped out of the Minneapolis Special School District number 1 into these suburban schools and et cetera. Having to do with the lawsuits and such things as that. And man, I'm telling you, there's such a trail of lines, dots, and et cetera that it's really frightening. But it looks like, Mr. Allen, in that period of basically 2000 to 2005, man, the Brotherhood made away with basically everything, including the kitchen stove and the Cadillac in the garage. But I thought that at some point, Mr. Ford and others would talk to you folks at the time that you were still in good standing. I mean, you clearly know you are no longer in good standing. That, you know, your organization, you know, had gone through about $750,000 that really couldn't be accounted for in about a 3-year period. And no one is held accountable. See, white folks are talking about that. This is another one of those situations, just like the stadium that you're talking about, where so-called leaders are out saying that there is total compliance. We on this program for the last year and a half have been quietly asking for the numbers on the sports facilities on the Viking Stadium. Just the numbers. Just give us the numbers. How many hours? Because the formula, as we've talked about on this program, was changed. It went from personnel, you know, in other words, we've got 95 blacks on the site, to two-thirds of the hours that would be worked in an accumulative, if you will, would be worked by persons of color and et cetera. And no one has been able to produce those numbers. And those numbers are enormous, would actually be enormous as pertains to two-thirds. Now, I well remember what the chair of the Council on Black Minnesotans said on this program last week, and you know he made last Wednesday night he made a series of serious allegations, particularly with some events involving some of the same people you're talking about, and you and I are talking about, who attempted to fleece the Mayo Clinic. Now, one thing for our international audience you do not do in Minnesota is that you do not attempt to step on and disrespect the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota.
Never.
And as Pat Juan said last, and I thought maybe we would get a call. Someone would call and question him about it. That is an outgrowth of the good work they did uncovering the fraud there in Rochester, that Republican delegation out of Olmsted County, where Rochester is the county seat, if you will, indicated to Governor Mark Dayton that they supported the opening of an office of the Council on Black Minnesotans in Rochester. First time in 15, 20 years the council had been invited to come into any other city except St. Paul. And all of this is tied into these documents that are emerging, Mr. Allen, of all this money that went into people's pockets and bank accounts and fraudulent laundering accounts. And I'm not talking about the laundry you wore. I'm talking about the laundering of money that people have stolen, really. I mean, you know. And so I have to say that, you know, when I hear the statistics that you just indicated at the top of tonight's program, I'm saddened as an African American. I'm saddened as a longtime activist and et cetera in this city. And let me just say this for anybody that wants to call, because sometimes it's always good to go to the files. You know, we've been asked a couple times, Mr. Allen, what are we doing? You know, I've heard, in fact, that was said on that program last Sunday. You know, what have you ever done? I will refer people, though, to a letter dated 29 August 1999 to the Honorable Judge James M. Rosenbaum, District Court Judge, United States District Court, District of Minnesota. It is a letter from me by the authority at that time vested in me as a member of the exec committee of the NAACP of Minneapolis, and the transgressions that were already beginning dealing with monies that had come to the organization and that had been misappropriated and et cetera, and the effect it was having on the Holman Agreement, if you will, as well as monitoring of the lawsuit known as Carter v. Gallagher, which integrated the Minneapolis Fire Department, in which the Minneapolis NAACP, a couple years before the 1999 letter from yours truly to the presiding chief judge of the Minnesota Federal Court, received $160,000. Bill Davis, Bill Davis now, who is under suspension, oops, and et cetera, was a part of that group that ripped that money off, if you will. But yet I'm looking at the minutes of an NAACP meeting in 2001. I mean, people had no idea when we were telling them that the organization had, under Shayla Lindsay, had secretly deposited over $183,000 in cash that they got as an outgrowth of the late and beloved Nelson Mandela coming here for an annual dinner. Oh, look out now. Okay. And, you know, the money being moved around. But by 2004, 2003, Mr. Allen, that cash had grown to $580,000, man.
Now, you said when Nelson Mandela, is that when he came here to go down to the...
he was here for the annual dinner.
Yeah.
The NAACP.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That was at a time when the Reverend Gail Ford, now national director of the branches, came here and received a payment of $70,000, oops, from the then president, who had just moved up to president, the Reverend Al Gallman. And, I mean, you know, Al, good man, I understand. The money looked good. And I'll never forget Reverend Ford coming out, if you will. And, of course, that created a problem for me because I reflected that in one of my books published in 2003 about the kind of ripoff that was going on. But what I basically heard from leadership, if you will, some who have passed over to the other side, in other words, they are deceased and et cetera, so, you know, I'd want to try to be respectful, but, you know, the facts are the facts. And these documents that now are being reviewed by the Attorney General, these documents have them folks' names on it, you know, being in the meetings, voting, and et cetera. And so to your specific question, though, Mr. Allen, yes, that $182,000 was money that was just given to the branch by the white corporate community because they were just enthralled with the presence of the beloved Nelson Mandela here, if you will. In fact, the morning that he got ready to fly out of here, they had a breakfast for him and just the white corporate community just gave him a check for $35,000 just for their appreciation of him coming and delivering a beautiful, beautiful message, if you will. But people were saying as they moved to purge the leadership and the troublemakers, such as myself, of the NAACP, they were saying, oh, no, there's no money. But you see, a number of them didn't know that there were these audits that had been done. Now, there was an attempt, by the way, the document that we just read, the audit for 2003 and 2004, with over $580,000 being spent. And this was before the Parent Information Centers were reincorporated and turned over to a private group, if you will. See, people play that game, too. And
yeah,
we are looking again at our files at the letter between Dwayne Reed, if you will, and the individual who had been sent by the National Board to make sure that the transaction took place without, quote-unquote, any confusion, if you will, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very – so, Mr. Edwards, so what you're telling me here is there, either the state guy with the NAACP and maybe the regional person – and maybe the St. Paul NAACP president and maybe even the Minneapolis president might know of some of this. And they're
well,
not still
the state. The state conference, Mr. Jordan there in Rochester, certainly knows. He certainly knows about the intervention by the Council on Black Minnesotans based on the complaint filed by the Mayo Clinic / St. Mary's in Rochester with regards to an attempt to racketeer, really. Woo! I hate to say it like that, but
the
racketeer.
The RICO Act.
Yeah, the RICO Act. But, yes, that group knows. But my good friend, the Reverend Gail Ford, who is now the director of branches, if you will, I mean, Reverend Ford knows all about this. I mean, here in the fortress, if you will, looking at all kinds of documents and letters from him and et cetera, talking in terms that we will cease and desist. That was the letters that was hit with. In fact, actually, I was expelled for life by the National Board because of comments I made in my book, The Minneapolis Story, at page 231, 233, 34, in which I talked in terms that this pilfering was going on and was killing the African-American community. I mean, it was just killing, and it's still just killing our community. All right?
Yes,
our people are not working. They're not being educated. They're not being protected, and et cetera. I mean, you know. But it's not for the want of that we didn't have the assets, the liquid assets, Mr. Allen, money, to have done some of the things that we boasted as a quote-unquote, community that could be done and should be done, okay? I mean, it's a lot of money, man. It's like Booker T. Hodges, former president of the NAACP, said in 2010 in a column in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder. In fact, you found a copy in 2010 also of an article by Mr. Charlie Holman, chief writer for the Spokesman Recorder, talking in terms of his concern about a similar pattern, didn't you?
Yes.
You talked about it on the air last Wednesday. Mm-hmm.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. And see, the thing is, these folks want to sit here and yell at us and say that we're bashing or hating on someone. But, Mr. Edwards, we have probably in the last maybe 5, 6, 7 years, maybe about between anywhere from $50 to $100 million that has been floated through these organizations, especially black organizations, with no kind of success at all whatsoever. No outcomes, nothing.
Absolutely. You are absolutely correct. I mean,
and so,
I don't know how more concise in concurrence that I could be with you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so if I can't go ask a guy like Alfred Babbage and John P. with Stir Step Foundation, and this is not bashing, this isn't slander, it isn't anything, it's just asking a question like, well, what happened really to the Cieza, the Burger King, the Tires Plus, and the Dairy Queen?
Oops.
And that was supposed to hire black people in North Minneapolis. Why is there a new plan after millions of dollars has already been in the kitty to do this? What happened? Is there a ledger that we can see how this stuff shrunk down, you know, and went away? Where did it go away to? Because if you have that kind of money in the bank and people have given you that kind of money and you're supposed to do this, this, and this, and the city's giving you forgiveness on a certain amount here, a certain amount there, and yep. and then you want to be prosecuted is in the letter from the city, or you want to have bill collectors come after you, all that stuff, then there needs to be like a roundtable, like almost like a come to Jesus meeting where we sit down, we can ask the questions that we want to ask out of Scott Gray, Alfred Babington Johnson, Bill English, Fred Easter, I mean, the crew, and say, hey, you know, you guys have really had some substantial money over the last years in Minneapolis. What has happened? I mean, if you're dealing in the dark, it has to come to the light. And I didn't invent that, but it's true, okay? And so if you're out there and you're supposed to be able, like, I'll give you an example, Mr. Edwards. I just did this report, and it was so easy to do because North Minneapolis has the highest rate of chlamydia in the United States.
Yes, it does. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Chlamydia, the clap, okay? And if you've ever been in the Army, you know about
it's
that.
It's a social disease,
okay?
Right. Right.
Yeah, it's a social disease. So you can get rid of it. And it's affecting women 13, 21 years old. Google the Minnesota Department of Health chlamydia. It will tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've been here. I grew up here. I was then out of town for the Army, and when I worked in these different places traveling, but this has been my
mm-hmm.
foundation.
Mm-hmm.
I've never, never, ever one time heard these people say they were going to address this in a young youth population that is getting it in overwhelming numbers compared to the white population here in this
and
town.
Killing them young also.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
It causes other complications and et cetera.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so a little disease like that, if we can't box up and eradicate something small like the clap, how
mm-hmm.
do you expect to handle $26 million or $100 million? Well, we've already seen millions of dollars that was never handled correctly. The problem is that this guard that they have now is not doing the appropriate job, nor do they want to do the appropriate job. And, I mean, I invite anybody out there who to challenge us, the number 347-426-3904, and give us a call and explain to me in your words if this is okay. We should let these people continue to manipulate these dollars, manipulate the state, use white guilt in the governor's office, tell the governor he can deliver, they can deliver votes for him for X number of dollars, which is extortion, and where is the benefit? Okay, again, Mr. Edwards explained his side. I'm going to explain my side real quick. People always ask me, well, what have you done for the community? Well, I'm a business person. I don't run a nonprofit, and if I did, everybody out there would have a big Thanksgiving and a big Christmas dinner and a job with the money that's been pushed.
Absolutely. Let me also do this again for clarification and transparency. The Pacific meeting is very interesting when it became quite clear that a significant amount of cash money had been brought in by the Mandela situation and that had really made the branch healthy once again after the loss of almost 160,000 during the period of 1995 to 1998. Ooh, ooh. I would refer those that are interested in the minutes of the Minneapolis branch of the NAACP's Executive Committee meeting of June 18, 2001. It was at Sabathini Community Center. Very interesting meeting. That's where the proposition of the presence of $152,160 in bank accounts, if you will, at that time, though our expenses was $73,223.04. That was actually repaid by the white corporate community again as an outgrowth of their appreciation of the Mandela situation and et cetera. Interesting reflections, because it came at a time when there was enough money, as an example, that the NAACP was working with the Minneapolis School District and specifically working at Roosevelt and it was talking in terms of program and et cetera. And in the discussion June 18, 2001 meeting was that the branch owed staff who had worked for the summer and were being brought aboard $13,000. So you're talking about an organization that seemed to be on the move, okay, had that kind of money to pay the salaries of staff people to work with our young people, if you will. This was money that was raised as an outgrowth of the Mandela presence, if you will, a certain level of respect that was brought by a previous president who had been ousted by William Davis and others, Ms. Seals, for those that still remember things back in 1998-99, how these things were taking place. No one wanted to fess up to the fact that the NAACP was going after because money was coming in. And then a couple years later, George W. Bush comes in as president, Leave No Child Left Behind. Monies are awarded to the Minneapolis branch. And, man, it was just amazing the people that came out of the woodwork declaring themselves to be leaders and respected people and et cetera. And when that battle had ended, as I said before, over $750,000 couldn't be accounted for.
Yeah, that's what happens. They come out of the woodwork when there's some money. Like No Child Left Behind was a great opportunity for every hustler, poverty pimp, and educational wannabe to string on and start some initiatives in town. I'm going to do this initiative, that initiative. And it's all bogus because they see that money there. And they don't have the people talking about education and helping our black youth right now are so far off base that it's ridiculous. You know, I've talked to professors that ask me, now these are black people. I got to take into account that these are black people doing this, and these are white professors with PhDs and masters asking me these questions. I have to be careful about what I say because it would be bashing if I said what I really wanted to say.
Uh-huh.
But they asked me, how is it that in North Minneapolis there can be a program in the schools, and the people that are the face and running it have no formal training in education? Can't even spell the word syllabus. Okay?
Yeah.
And how are these people? How did Lynn Norgren take people to Washington, D.C. to rep the. Lynn Norgren is the president of the Teachers Federation Union here in Minneapolis. How could she take people to D.C. to represent black education in North Minneapolis or in Minneapolis public schools in general, and the highest education level is a GED with the person that she brought. You know, I know.
Yes, I know.
I know five people that I could pick out blindfolded. I mean,
uh-huh.
It's great that people want to advocate for stuff, but again, you know, you have. That's what our problem is right there. You pick and choose favor if the political infrastructure where there are a plantation mentality involved, and you have some overseers, and you have some house Negroes, and you have the massa, and there's several masses, and you follow that massa because that massa is throwing you a little dollars here and there, throwing you a little crumb, and you're glad to just take that and run with it.
Oh, yeah. Let me also do this, Don, because
what
this is all about is documentation. We don't want people to say we're just blowing our wind and et cetera. I want to put onto the record a legal document filed on Tuesday morning on September 17, 2002 at approximately 6:54 a.m. in the 8th Circuit Court of Appeals, sitting at that time in St. Paul in special session, if you will. Yours truly was a part of that appeal. It goes back to my letter and formal complaint to the Chief Judge of the Federal Court of the State of Minnesota, the Honorable Rosenbaum, as I've said before. Mm-hmm. Documentation, August 29th, 1999, to the Honorable Judge Rosenbaum, James M. It took until the morning of September 17, 2002 at 6:54 and went before the United States Court of Appeals for the Eighth Circuit, if you will. What happened there, the people that came forward talking in terms, it was really no problem. It was interesting, the testimony, affidavits, and et cetera. The Eighth Circuit Court made a specific ruling. It took another 3 years, but the state of Minnesota indicated that the NAACP and the so-called parent information centers were to return over $500,000 that had ill-gotten and et cetera. So that's for those folks that asked the question, you know, what have you guys done? What have you done? Who, you know, you're running your mouth. This has been a long, tenacious, and painful battle as it pertains to the corruption within, unfortunately, the African-American community. And it's not us that is suffering. It is the masses of our people, if you will. It is, you know, those that can't find decent housing, decent education, and et cetera. And our role here, you know, in the last 14, 13 minutes that we have tonight, Mr. Allen, is to just begin to lay out the facts. Because, see, I hear people play the game of, well, I'm confused. I don't understand how what's this got to do with anything.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
It has all the world to do with the furtherance, if you will, the endorsement of corruption, fraud, theft, and et cetera, that has brought us to this particular point. And you see it reflected even on some of the calls that come forward, be it this program or some other programs, you know, that do not control the calls that come in to the program, if you will, which we are, you know, saddened by. But anyways, just thought it would be important to lay out how an organization went through about $750,000 in about a three-year period. And had to pay some of it back, and then went out of business. I'm talking about the sub component that they put together called the Parent Information Center.
Wow, that's terrible. That's terrible. All that money. That's why the community can't get ahead. You know,
I know we must be getting some text messages there in Studio A, but our policy here is if you've got comment, you got to come on the air.
Yeah, you got to come on the air and you got to say something. Right now, we've got people in the chat room, Mr. Edwards, but there is no one calling in. And just let me check one more place here. There is nobody calling in right now. But we got some people in the queue listening. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. People are nervous, Mr. Edwards. You know, they don't really want to call in because they don't have a challenge. And the people that are listed, I want to talk about it and call us later. Half of them were involved in money schemes, you know, and they called like they was innocent, like they had nothing to do with it. And I laugh quite a bit on Facebook when you mention someone's name. They say, oh, we're going to get a restraining order. And I always put on there, you idiot, this is Facebook.
That's
you can't
right.
get no restraining
right.
order on Facebook. Ain't nobody threatened you. You're just telling people how sorry you are. You know?
Yeah, well, that's why for the last two Wednesdays, I have specifically identified correspondence, documents, dates, even times in the case of the appeal to the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, so that when, you know, folks are talking about that this is misinformation or your integrity is on the line and et cetera. Now, documentation and the facts are there, okay?
Yeah.
And like I said again, it was it'll be a year next week. We thought that we had a new dawn as it pertains to the NAACP and what it was going to be doing. And I think that the chairman, again, the chairman of the Minnesota Council on Black Minnesotans, if you will, was on point. I mean, I hated to hear him talk in terms of some of the skullduggery that's going on, but he laid it out. And, you know, no, none of us are perfect. We don't have, quote-unquote, the formula for detail and absolute specificity, if you will. But I tell you, Mr. Allen, I'm looking at these many documents and et cetera here in front of us here that we've had for a long time. You know, we watch people talking and waxing and rapping and trying to pretend like, you know, that they do everything because they just a volunteer when we all know that that's not true. By the way, we're going to be coming back next week taking another look at the Enterprise Zone taking a look at what was happening with that money, if you will. And we're not talking about our the new Enterprise Zone or Achievement Zone, as they now call it.
Yeah, the Achievement Zone, yeah.
Yeah, we're talking about Mr. Palmer and his operation and how that money was spent and et cetera.
Oh,
those
yeah.
programs dealing with tutoring and such things as that, you know, a lot of questions out there. And it has to be laid out so that those young people who are moving, and by the way, I really was saddened that a youth program on KMOJ was taken off the air 2 weeks ago because the station management there did not like the fact that the young people expressed their concern about how they were treated and how their guest, who was the United States Congressman from the 5th Congressional District, was treated, disrespected, and the program did not run then. They were put on suspension for a week, and then the program was jettisoned. I think that's just terrible. Yeah,
that is terrible. That you know that's not nice at all. That's actually bad.
Yeah. So that's what it is. Oh, look, just quickly on as we move into the last minutes, just want to indicate that everybody's out here talking about police, and how bad things are in Minneapolis now. When we again as bloggers and radio hosts talked about the problem of police and et cetera, particularly during the Terrence Franklin tragedy and et cetera, many of our leaders were saying there wasn't any problem.
Oh, yeah.
And
not
that,
at all.
Yeah, that Mr. Franklin maybe was a bad character and et cetera. Now I'm hearing people talking in terms of this, but what people need to be advised very quietly, the Hodges administration and specifically Chief Jhené Harto have embraced the recommendations of the Department of Justice after a one-year examination of things that were happening here with the police department, et cetera, and are moving ahead post-haste. I tell you what, we're not going to reveal what that information is. We've got leaders out there. They should have the ability to go find out the information. But if they make a pronouncement, if you will, they say something about it, then we'll certainly respond. But the Minneapolis Police Department has embraced the recommendations of the Department of Justice as it pertains to police misconduct and other kinds of features, and it's going to be very interesting in the early part of 2015, Mr. Allen. Just thought we'd throw that out there for some, you know, as part of a news item.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah. These folks had every opportunity to have brought forward their, as we used to say, their brief, if you will, into the Court of Equity, stand in the dock, if you will, and speak clearly and concisely with regards to their knowledge of police misconduct in the city of Minneapolis. I'm still looking to find affidavits that were sent to the Department of Justice by, quote-unquote, those who talk in terms that they're involved in law enforcement or involved in fighting police misconduct and et cetera. I don't see it happening. So I mean, all we can do is, as a person on another radio program said, that 2015 is going to be about talking about the issues. And, man, I think that's just great. You got a text coming in, Don.
Yeah, I just told somebody that they need to call in if they want to talk to us. I apologize.
Well, we only got 4 minutes, so.
Yeah, that's it. 4 minutes left.
Yeah, we're only going an hour tonight. You know, we've got a lot of things going on. So need to got 3.5 minutes now. But next week we'll be back. We'll continue to take a look at the records and the documents, if you will. We're moving back and forth over a period of 15 years, if you will. We're supporting the column by Booker T. Hodges, former president of the NAACP in 2010, in which he laid out the amount of money that was going into the pockets, quote unquote, of the Unholy Alliance.
I remember that story. That created a lot. It created a little firestorm.
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. Yes, it did. So, by the way, we had said that we our deep condolences to the family of the young man, 12-year-old child gunned down in Cleveland, Ohio. There'll be some additional information. We're working on a link and contact with some activists in Cleveland. That has really turned ugly out there. As information has been forthcoming, if you will, just because the majority media is not saying a lot about it doesn't mean that there is not an atmosphere, quote unquote, of concern and anger in Cleveland, Ohio. 12-year-old African American child, about 2 weeks ago, Mr. Allen,
yes.
Gunned down,
yep.
Shot within 2 seconds after the police arrived, pulled up their car 5 feet away from him. White officer who should have been in the crazy house opens the door, shoots the baby twice in the stomach. He dies. His mother's right across the street. He lived right across the street from the park. She rushes out. Police threaten to arrest her, tell her to get control of herself, calm down, if you will, and then told her that she had to make a decision if she was going to go with the 12-year-old or the 14-year-old daughter, the deceased's sister. And then when she got ready to get in the back of the ambulance to ride with her 12-year-old baby, the white folks told us that, no, you got to ride up in the front. You can't ride back here in the back. You know, All she wanted to do was to hold her baby's hand. Because
wow.
He actually was already dead, though they were making it appear that they were attempting to administrate to him. But the coroner later said that he died almost instantly with those two shots hitting him in his stomach and chest area. But again, 12-year-old African American child gunned down, and the media is not paying as much attention to it if it was a 12-year-old white child. You know what I'm saying, Mr. Al?
Oh, no. Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. They didn't give a hoot. So.
Yeah.
And yesterday on ABC, Mr. Edwards, on Inside Edition, they had the nerve to have this police officer play a tape of a black guy who was, like, mentally unstable in
wow.
a pool hall and had a knife, and all these police officers had tasers, billy clubs, and, you know, he went and busted in his head and took it from him, right?
Yeah.
And they actually showed the officer took out his gun and shot him, and he died.
Yeah.
And I'm like, they were justifying it, and the police officer, retired police officer on the air said, oh, yeah, I would have shot him way a long time before that.
Oh, that's
like,
the way they're
wow.
talking. That's why
yeah.
attention is so high. But we must give credit to our young people, and we must give credit to the racial balance. Because I got to tell you, a lot of white folks are out there marching with our people, a lot of Hispanics, a lot of Native Americans in different places. I mean, this is something that I think that the conservative wing, Mr. Allen, thought was going to go away, and it has not disappeared. And by the way, since we were last on last week, there's been at least 5 other African Americans been killed under just outrageous circumstances, from Phoenix
yep.
to Boston. Okay, just shooting brothers down like they're dogs in the street. And then the man is all upset now because they had to expose himself. And we're going to touch on that a little bit, Mr. Allen, next week for our international audience. The report that confirmed what some of us as journalists had known for a decade about the brown-skinned people that had been tortured by this government.
Yep. Okay.
All right.
Well,
then.
As we go into the last 30 seconds, I'd like to thank everybody for listening, and we'll be back next week. And
all right,
James
Brown, take us home.